Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back, everyone, to 1001 Radio Crime Solvers and one of my favorite detective dramas, The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, featuring Raymond Chandler's private eye, Philip Marlowe. Marlowe was a hard-boiled detective who wasn't afraid to do what he had to do to get things done. At one point during its run, The Adventures of Philip Marlowe was the top-running radio show in America. Enjoy.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison of the grave. There's no other end, but they never learn.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Bedside Manners.
Get your hat and hit the street.
Hiya, Tommy.
Paper tonight?
Okay, kid. Here you are.
Thanks. Take it easy now.
Sure.
Hey, Mr. Marlowe, you changed. Mr. Marlowe, watch the car. Look out.
Hey, you.
Driver, run that light. Hey, Chad, call an ambulance. Somebody hang on, Mr. Marlowe. Don't try to move. You're going to be okay. Just take it easy.
The way it happened, 2 weeks ago. When they scraped me up off the pavement, I felt like everything must have been broken. But finally, the doctor boiled it all down to a fractured tibia and assorted bruises. Netted me 10 days in the hospital, tangled up with enough pulleys, weights, and trapeze bars to rig a circus tent. After which, I managed to get sprung to the peace and quiet of my own apartment. There, on a special bed in my living room, I spent 4 days scratching my broken leg through an inch of plastic cast while I worried about the business I was missing. Until finally, Ordine Patterson, a girl with a multi-million-dollar estate I'd worked for once, insisted on seeing me immediately about a job, one she was sure I could handle even flat on my back.
Phil, it's about my brother, Maynard.
Oh, another jam, huh?
Yes.
Oh. Wait a minute, I gotta get comfortable. I guess your father knew his son pretty well when he left. Yeah, he left all that dough in your hands, Ordine.
Yes, only this time, I sincerely believe Maynard's learned his lesson, Phil. He's worried sick. And frankly, so am I.
So am I, if I can straighten this leg out. Well, if you think I can help in this condition, it can't be too serious.
Right.
Hey, before you sit down, reach me a cigarette, will you?
Yeah, sure. Sure, Phil. Here it is.
Oh, thanks.
Phil, last Saturday night, Maynard went out on a binge. He got home at 4 o'clock in the morning, awfully intoxicated.
Well, it's not unusual for Maynard, is it?
No, except this time he was frightened, Phil. Scared stiff.
Oh, what about?
Well, that's just the point. We don't know. He was so drunk, he couldn't remember anything. Didn't know where he'd been or with whom.
Hmm.
Oh, Phil, it was terrible.
Well, if this was last Saturday, why are you so worried? Anything had happened, surely by now you'd have heard.
Yes, but something did happen, Phil.
Oh?
This morning I got a phone call from a man who meant business, believe me.
Mm-hmm.
I made notes on a memo pad while he talked so I wouldn't forget any of it. Here, got my bag. Here, read it.
Oh. This is Fish. Fish?
Yes, Fish.
Tell Maynard 50 G's. Important. Money by tomorrow or trouble.
Then he hung up on me, Phil.
Fish. Did you or Maynard ever hear of him before?
Well, I certainly didn't, and when I asked Maynard, he didn't know him either.
Hmm.
He had a cold, heavy voice, and spoke with a thick lisp.
You want me to peg this Fish for you?
Yes, so I'll know why Maynard owes that much money.
Now, look, baby, I'm bedridden. I'm stuck. I can't even move.
I know that, Phil, but you have the phone here, a lot of contacts, and plenty of diplomacy. If this is something I can get Maynard out of by paying that money, then I'll pay.
Okay, baby, I'll try. But look, if it's outside the law,
you'll turn Maynard in. Yes, yes, I'm aware of that.
All right, where do I start? Where did he start Saturday?
At the Colony Club with a female named Faye Altman. Mm-hmm. Well, whatever happened must have begun there. That's why I thought of you, Phil. You know the Colony Club.
Well, I know their Scotch's Johnny Walker. And Sid Rayfield's the owner, that's all.
Well, that may be enough. Will you want to talk to Maynard?
Yeah, yeah. Send him over in about an hour, will you?
Yes, he'll be here. And that Altman girl's number is Sunset, 0144.
0144.
Yes.
Okay, Ordine, I'll get him. At least my dial finger isn't... Oh, just a minute. Hello?
That's Fish, Marlowe.
What?
Fish. I know my pigeon's with you now. I followed her. Don't clip her wings, pal. Back out now while you still can. I'm warning you.
Phil, who was that? You look upset.
Yeah, well, my my horse just ran forth. Look, you better run along now, Ordine.
Well, okay, Phil.
And stay out of dark corners, huh? In spite of my sitting duck position, I told myself that a private detective who listens to warnings today is out of business tomorrow. So I put in a call for Sid Rayfield at the Colony Club. Sid was out, so I left a message for him to get in touch with me. Next, I tried Faye Altman, but the Sunset number went unanswered. After that, I started checking for the next best thing to legs I could think of. A guy named Hunger Malloy. By profession, a roving bookie. By appearance, a slouch and threadbare hound's tooth propped against any convenient lamppost. Hunger, by some peculiar instinct, either knew or could find out about anything, especially slightly illegal. And because I'd once pried him out of a tight spot, he loved me like a brother. I finally located him in a pool hall on Melrose and told him what I needed to know. He promised it was as good as done and was off to the Colony Club and I would hear from him. Well, that left me with nothing to do but scratch my cast again, worry about my gun being in the desk drawer in my office, think about Fish, and wait. Things went like that for 45 minutes, and then... Come in. Who is it? Who's there?
Oh. Why, it's me, Hunger.
Oh.
What's the matter, Philip? You're jumpy.
Yeah, I'm real glad to see you, fella.
Likewise. How you feeling under the weather, huh?
Yeah.
How's it been?
No, it's bothering me a little.
Look, I brought you some flowers.
Oh, Hunger, you shouldn't have.
I know. I tried to get long stems, but them plants in the park ain't doing so good this year. Hey, listen, are you sure you gave me the right dope on the phone, Philip?
Sure, I'm sure. Why? What'd you find out?
Oh, that's just it. Nothing. I went to the Colony Club and got talking around, but not one thing worth noticing went on there Saturday night.
Well, maybe it started there and moved out, huh?
Yeah, I tried that. Some of the customers went out to the valley after to shoot a little dice. Another bunch moved down to that big joint on Adams for some poker. That's all.
Gambling, huh? Could be a gambling setup. Were they big games?
No, just the usual. Nothing extra at all.
Oh.
And especially, I couldn't pin down a thing on any 50 G's changing hands.
Are you positive, Hunger?
Well, you don't ask too many questions in that league, Philip, but I'm pretty sure nobody got rich or I'd have heard, you know?
Oh.
I got a hint, at least.
Yeah, well, look, what about this guy named Fish?
Blank. Some new faces in town, but no high rollers answering to Fish.
And a background on Faye Altman?
Yeah, some. Pick and shovel queen, in a nice way.
Uh-huh.
Been digging nuggets here and there for a year or so. The latest is the gill-edged punk you want to know about, Maynard Patterson.
Uh-huh.
Say, can I have one of these?
Yeah, go ahead. Feed your face.
Incidentally, they was among those present at the Colony Saturday night, if that means something to you. And that's about it, Philip.
Okay, Hunger. Thanks a million.
I'm sorry I couldn't be more help, but I think you're getting a bum pitch.
Oh, well,
you... Visitors. Hey, I got a back way out of here. It won't look so good.
Sure. Bedroom, Hunger. You can go out the window and down the fire escape. Hey, wait a minute. Is that a new shirt?
No, I come into a bit of clink, so I had it washed.
Ha-ha.
I hope you're feeling better, Philip. I'll see
you.
Yeah,
thanks. Oh, come in.
Ordine, my sister, said you... wanted to see me, Mr. Marlowe. Sorry about your leg.
I'm sorry about it, too. I can't get comfortable. Hey, I hear you're really tied one on the other night, huh, kid?
Yeah, but I'm through, Mr. Marlowe. I swear it.
Yeah, sure. Sit down.
Oh, thanks.
What about the gambling? Lose your head over that, too?
Yeah, I guess I do. As far as my allowance goes, anyway.
Now, look, I want you to tell me all you remember about Saturday night.
Well, I went to the Colony Club with Faye. That's my girl, Faye Altman.
By the way, how do you rate stuff like Faye on your allowance?
Huh? Just a minute.
Skip it. Go ahead.
Well, I was drinking quite a bit, and by 1 o'clock, I guess I was pretty fuzzy. I lost Faye someplace. Then I went outside for some air, and from there on, it's just a blank.
Well, now, look, if you didn't pass out cold, you're bound to have some flashes you can remember. I want it all.
Well, I do remember a couple of things, Mr. Marlowe.
Oh?
They're more like a dream than anything else. I seem to remember a big, old-fashioned house. It was dark and gloomy with high ceilings and old, ornate brass chandeliers. I don't know how I got there or what I was doing.
Were you alone?
Well, I don't think so. I've got a man's face in my mind, a flabby guy in a silk shirt. He had big hands, freckles on the backs of him, mm-hmm. with kind of a reddish hair on him. I remember them against something green.
Did he lisp?
I can't seem to remember. Mm. Just thinking about him gives me the willies, but I don't know why. I can't figure out why. I talked to Faye. She waited for me until the Colony closed, and then she went home. She was pretty mad about it.
You sure that's all you can remember?
Yep. Yeah, that's everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, does it make any sense at all?
Not much. Sounds like you could have been mixed up at a poker game at a green top table in an old dump on Adams. Lost your shirt to a fat guy named Fish.
You think that's all there is to it, huh?
Well, not quite all. There's the little matter of 50,000 bucks you owe him.
50,000? Look, Mr. Marlowe, if you and Ordeen get me out of this mess, I swear I'll straighten up. I'll never get into trouble again, honest.
Sonny boy, what you do later is your sister's headache, strictly. I got trouble enough lining things up so you can get off the hook. Now go on home and stay there till I call you.
Okay. Mr. Marlowe, I know you don't like me, but... Well, thanks anyhow.
$50,000.
Oh.
Yeah, sunset 01:44. They have to put Cass on so tight.
Hello?
Faye, my name is Phil Marlowe. I've been trying to reach you for 2 hours.
Well, maybe you need longer arms, Mr. Marlowe.
No, just some conversation about Maynard Patterson. I'm in my apartment number 210, Granada Arms on Franklin. Can you come over?
Why would I want to talk about Maynard to you in the first place? And why don't you come over here in the second?
Well, in the first place, I'm a private detective. In the second, I got a busted leg. How about it? It's important.
Well, I've never dated a private detective with a broken leg before. It sounds entrancing. I'm around the corner on Bronson. I'll be right there.
Good. Goodbye, Faye. Come on in. Did Rayfield in person yet?
Yeah. The boys at the club told me about your urgent call, Peepers, so I came right out.
Well, if I'd known you were coming, I'd have baked the snake, Sid.
Skip the cracks. I know what you want.
Well, and you're clairvoyant, because I'm not sure myself yet.
Try this. You're working for Ordeen Patterson like you did once before because that punk brother of hers is in a bad jam with one Mr. Fish. Well?
Yeah, it's quite neat. You happen to know the guy?
Yeah, Marlowe, I happen to know the guy. That's why I'm here. To tip you because you're a friend of mine, more or less. So I say leave it alone, Marlowe. Get out of it. Stay out. It's none of your business.
You know, you talk like a man with a personal angle.
What? Why, I ought to split your lip for that. I come here to do you a turn.
Take it easy. Mind your bedside manners, Sid. I'm an invalid.
You'll be worse than that if you don't back out of this. I'm telling you, this guy Fish is too hot to handle, Marlowe, and you better... Who's that?
How should I know? For a sick room, this joint's becoming more like Hollywood and Vine by the minute.
I took a long chance coming here. I got to get out without being seen.
Well, try the bedroom window and fire escape. Everybody else does.
Don't let them in till I'm gone. You hear? It ain't healthy.
Marlowe!
Sid! Sid, what is it?
Marlowe, I'm hit!
Sid!
Lousy, silent, sir.
Oh. Oh, this stinking leg. Nice going, Mr. Fish. I suppose that makes me...
Right, Mr. Marlowe.
Yeah, Mitzi, I'm okay. I'm fine.
Well, I thought you was talking to somebody.
No, I was reading. I didn't hear the buzzer.
Oh, yeah. I know what you mean. Sometimes I get real carried away myself.
That's fine.
Look, I fixed up your dinner. Everything just like you ordered. Here, I'll drag the...
No, Mitzi, I don't think I'll eat right now. Just put the tray down and beat it, huh? Like a good girl?
Yeah, but what about the dishes?
Get them in the morning. Will you get out of here? Will you go on? Okay, Fish, the girl's gone. Well, come on in. Did you hear me? I said come on in. I guess I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe, but first... This Wednesday night, CBS brings you the premiere of a bright new musical show, The ABCs of Music, starring Robert Q. Lewis and Ralph Flanagan's orchestra. It promises a half hour of top hits and top entertainment every Wednesday on CBS, when also you hear the hilarious Groucho Marx quiz show, You Bet Your Life, and the drama of Dr. Christian. The ABCs of Music, Groucho Marx, and Dr. Christian come every Wednesday on most of these same CBS stations. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, the second act of Philip Marlowe, and tonight's story, The Bedside Manners.
A man is never ready to die, really. Sometimes saying you are helps. Sometimes, like when you're flat on your back waiting for a killer with a silencer, you might step into view through your bedroom door. I kept on waiting for 60 seconds, each as long as a fall down an empty well. Once I thought I heard the window close. At least another 5 minutes went by. Then I actually began to believe that for some reason Fish had gone away. Well, that made the scoreboard real easy to read. Sid Rayfield, a guy who knew his way around, had been killed. And I hadn't been able to do a thing about it. It was time for a call to homicide. But even as I reached for the phone, it went off. Hello. I said hello.
This is your last warning, Marlowe.
Oh, you got to a phone fast, Buster. What's on your slippery mind, Fish?
Something you'd be smart to pay attention to. You see, Marlowe, you're only still alive because it's convenient to me.
Too bad you didn't feel that way about Sid Rayfield.
Rayfield got what he deserved. And so will you. Like I said, you're only still alive because it's convenient to me. You happen to be working for the lady who holds the purse strings.
Go on.
Therefore, there's very little more, Marlowe, except this. Maynard Patterson's a lousy poker player. On Saturday night, he dropped $50,000 to me. $50,000 in two markets, Marlowe. One for $2,000, the other for $48,000. I want both paid promptly. Want to stand?
Not quite. Maynard Patterson doesn't remember what happened Saturday night.
So?
Oh, maybe you know all about it and you're making this up as you go along.
No, Marlowe, that's not the case. And if you drag yourself to the windowsill in your bedroom, you'll find all the proof you need.
What do you mean?
That I left one of the markets there in a white envelope. The one for $2,000. Annis and the poor little rich boy's own handwriting. I left it there so you'd know I'm not kidding about the 48 grand. I'll be in touch. So long, Marlowe.
Why, you're all a lousy double crook. Come in!
Sure. Why not? How could a girl ever resist the welcome in your voice? I'm Faye Altman, private detective.
That figures.
What happened to you? Fall out of a transom or trip over a clue? Which?
Neither. It was a wisecrack, honey. I laughed so hard I fell down and broke my leg.
Let's get down to business, huh?
Yeah. For a starter, Faye, what's your connection with Maynard Patterson? How tight is the knot?
Huh? What was that again?
I said you and Maynard. Just how chummy are you two?
I thought I heard you right. You know, private detective, I don't like being pushed around.
Faye, there's a dead man in the bedroom.
A dead man? Did you say a dead man?
Sid Rayfield. He was murdered, Faye.
No. Oh, not Sid. Gee, he was a nice guy, Marlowe. Sharp, but nice.
Faye, I want you to go in there and look for an envelope on the windowsill.
An envelope? No, I don't think I want
to... It's important, Faye. I can't get out of this bed. Now, go on. It may help us tag Sid's killer.
But... All right. I'll get it. You say it's near the window... Oh!
Keep going, Kay. At the windowsill. Do you see it?
Yeah. I've got it. Here. Hey, the window's broken in there. Do you know it?
Yeah. Now, Faye, my question about you and Maynard, somehow or other, it may count. Are you in love with him?
No. I mean, I like him all right. He's a good time, nice places, nice people, nice little presents.
But no yachts.
No, that's right. No yachts. And I like yachts, Private Detective. They beat rowing around in MacArthur Park, I know. I've tried them both. Anything else?
Yeah, turn it around. How does he feel about you?
Overboard, I guess. Look, you said that this might help catch Sid's killer. I like Sid, so I'd like to see that happen. But make this question a good one, because it's your last.
Fair enough. Maynard loves you, you love money. Maynard didn't have any. Now the question. Did he have any plan to change all that?
Just one. He was saving up every cent he could squeeze out of that stingy sister of his for a stake in a big card game. He was going to run it into big dough. Any help, Private Detective?
Yeah, if you call checking other people's stories out, I help.
Which translates into what?
Maynard did just that. Only he lost it all Saturday night. Lost his stake and 50,000 bucks more.
What? He owes that much dough?
Yeah, yeah. Now tell me, have you heard from Maynard since?
You had your last question, Private Detective, remember? Good night, Marlowe. It's been a big, fat pleasure.
I'll bet. Anyhow, Faye, my best to the fish.
Your very best to the fish?
Yeah.
I don't get it. What fish?
Never mind. Goodbye, baby, and don't slam the door. When the lady was gone, it was time to call the police. But I was dying hard, and even as I dialed the number, I turned the envelope that had been left on the windowsill over in one hand. The envelope was the cheap kind you find in any dime store with nothing written on it. And the note itself, which read, "I owe the bearer 2,000 bucks payable within 24 hours, was signed Maynard Patterson and dated Saturday.
Homicide.
It was on a square piece of memo paper, and it made me think about a little item
homicide,
which for quite a while had been sitting last row, last seat in the back of my mind.
Hello?
But trying real hard
to be
a star pupil. Now, Marlowe, the fishing may be great. Oh, this leg. Come on, baby, be home.
Hello?
Mrs. Marlowe, Ordean.
Oh, Phil, what have you found out?
I'm not sure, but among other things, I may have caught a killer. Now, listen, do you still have that note? You know, the one you brought over here, the memo you made after Fish called? Have you got it?
Why, yes, it's in my handbag. But
never mind the question. Just get it, will you?
All right, I'll only be a moment.
I'll hang on.
You better just hang up, Marlowe.
I wasn't expecting you just yet, Maynard.
No. Nor this gun, I'm sure. Hang up, Marlowe.
It'll only make a call back, you know.
Yeah. And won't my dear sister be exasperated when she keeps getting a busy signal? No matter how long she dials, only a busy signal.
The pronunciation is signal, Maynard. Huh? Or do I call you fish? And don't look so surprised, your act stank. People who can't pronounce the letter S avoid it instead of going out of their way to use it, as in Perth strings.
My mistake, Marlowe.
Yeah, among a lot of others. You never should have been careless about the kind of paper you wrote the IOU on. Your sister, who you're trying to swindle, came in here earlier with the same jottings on a piece of paper that's got the same top edge. Irregular. Because,
yeah,
no doubt...
I know. Because it was ripped off the same telephone pad. And I wouldn't have used that paper since IOUs are customarily written during or immediately after a card game. And I couldn't have been at home at the time of the game. All right, stop it, Marlowe. There's no need for any more hypotheses.
No, you can fill in all the blanks, can't you? Step by step, a rotten, tailor-made scheme to get your sister to save you by paying 50,000 bucks to a gambler named Fish who doesn't exist.
I said stop it.
Slimy setup that began with a fake one-night stand of bottle and bond amnesia. Moved on to an also fake telephone call to Ordean from a heavy named Fish. A man with a lift.
Shut up, Marlowe.
And the payoff, the confession call to me.
Yes, Mr. Marlowe, everything you say is so. But I'm still not beaten, and I won't be. You're the only one who knows all this. And even as Fish killed Sid Rayfield, Fish is going to kill you. Fish, Marlowe, not me. Fish, the ruthless gambler who never will be caught, but who my sister will pay nevertheless. Is that clear, Marlowe?
Not quite. Why did you kill Rayfield? He had me convinced that Fish actually existed.
Which is the reason he died. He was playing my game, Marlowe, but not for me. Somehow or other, he found out what I was doing. Maybe because he always checked carefully when anybody got too interested in Faye Altman. And he decided to help things along, then cut himself in. Well, you know the answer to that. Now, if you don't mind, turn on the radio, Marlowe.
Why? Silencer doesn't
make... Turn it on. Louder. I wouldn't want anything to go wrong now, Marlowe. I've been so lucky. Lucky that I got away from my sister and was free to watch this building, this apartment. Lucky so that I could see who came and who went and act accordingly. Yeah, I've been lucky, all right. You do grant me that, don't you, Marlowe?
Yeah, sure. You've been lucky. Yeah, you've been real lucky, Patterson, up to now. But you know how it is with luck, kid? One minute you have it, the next minute it runs out. Look, do you mind if I turn this off? It's putting me to sleep.
You are brave, aren't you, Marlowe?
No. Just lucky. Lucky that someone's standing behind you.
Who? The mounted police?
No. Just a guy. A guy named Hunger Malloy. It's a funny kind of a guy, Maynard. He was here earlier tonight, and he ducked out by way of the bedroom. At least, I thought he ducked out.
Oh, quit it, Marlowe.
Huh?
Now, don't budge an inch. I'm not going to turn around and give you the chance to go for that gun, which is probably under your pillow. Oh, no.
Oh, but, Maynard, you should do something. You're about to be hitting the noggin, honest, Maynard, with a vase.
That, Marlowe, I'll believe when it happens. Oh!
He just wouldn't take your word, would he, Philip? Well, that's the way it goes. I'll see you.
Now, wait a minute, Hunger. Come back here.
I can't, pal. You got a corpse in there. That means cops. Them and me don't mix.
Don't worry about it. Just tell me before I bust. You started for the window 20 minutes ago. What happened?
Well, Philip,
what happened, Hunger?
I got delayed. After that, stuff was popping. This louse was in there, then the corpse delecti, and then the louse again at the window, leaving an envelope, et cetera.
Yeah, but the delay, Hunger. Before company started coming, what was it? Well?
The truth, Philip?
Yeah, try it. It may not hurt at all.
Okay. They was on your dresser. The jazziest pair of pearl cufflinks, Philip, I seen since I used to deal in Vegas. I was attracted.
Hunger, it's the last favor to a guy you've already done a big favor for. Take them. The cufflinks. Go ahead, kid.
All right, Philip. As long as you put it so nice, I will. Now, like I was saying... Good night,
Philip. Wait a minute, Hunger. The cufflinks. Take them with you now.
Of course. That's exactly what I'm doing, Philip. See you around.
Funny little guy. Funny name. Hunger Malloy. You know, it's a strange thing. But a broken leg makes the old wheels go round. Well, that figures. Makes you think about breaks. And that brings me back to Hunger Malloy again. The only break he ever got was in his skull. Somebody once said we make our own breaks. I don't know about that. I didn't break my leg. Or maybe I did. Did I really look where I was going? And Maynard Patterson. Look at all the breaks he had. Loads of dough. Still, he didn't know where he was going either. And Sid Rayfield. I wonder if when the slug hit him, he thought, what a lousy break.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and are written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Featured in our cast were Ann Stone, David Ellis, Vivi Janis, Wilms Herbert, Paul Dubov, and Frank Gerstle. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Orant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time it was strictly out of whack. From a perfect hostess, who was rude to her guests, past a big red fence that ran all the way from L.A. to Palm Springs, to a second-story man stabbed to death in a basement apartment.
Speaking.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison of the grave. There's no other end, but they never learn.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Uneasy Head.
Hey, Slattery, you running a bar here?
Don't be neglecting the regular clientele.
Okay. Everybody relax. Remember, them also serve will only stand around and wait. I'm calling them like I see them. Now, you try again, chum. Another shot?
Yeah. Say, Slattery, you happen to know a guy named Sammy Archer? I was supposed to meet him here at 6. That was an hour ago.
Here you are, chum. Another shot.
What's yours, friend?
Rye, wander on the side.
Rye and a little help.
Slattery, I asked you a question.
Listen, chum, I sell whiskey. I sell gin. I sell beer. Pretzels I give away, but only pretzels. If you're busting with questions, try Louie.
Louis?
Yeah, a punk in the corner there, the guy with the patent leather hair.
Oh.
Louis welcomes visitors. Now, you want to pay for this drink?
Oh, wouldn't miss it for the world. Mind it for me, will you?
Hey, okay. Round boy, I'm going to forget I'm a lady.
Your name, Louis?
That's me.
Slattery tells me you might have some information I want.
Could be. What race?
Don't want any dope on ponies, Louis. I'm looking for a guy.
A guy like who?
Archer. Sammy Archer. Do you know him?
No. What's the matter? You welch on a bet?
No. Well, thanks anyway, Louis.
I got something good at Belmont, if you will.
Check. Beer twice. Bourbon once around. Coming up now. No luck, eh, Chum? I thought maybe Louis could help you. He knows everyone in town.
Yeah? Well, here's the Sammy Archer, a guy I never met. Well, so long, Chum.
Yeah. Don't go away mad, huh?
Oh, not a chance, Slattery. After all, you... Hey. Hey, what kind of scotch was that? Tastes like boiled cabbage heads.
Slattery, what did you... A drink, it was dope. Are you no good, tooth-timing?
For a long time. 100 years, maybe, I felt good. The temple was beautiful. Chinese beautiful. Everywhere lacquered woodwork that had the deep bottomless luster of a pigeon blood ruby, and 1,000 shelves filled with 10,000 smiling ivory Buddhas, and the lovely streamlined dancing girl, beaming in a white silk mandarin robe, waiting my pleasure. But then suddenly the 100 years ran out. The lacquered woodwork was a bar, the Buddhas lines of whiskey bottles, a white silk mandarin gown and apron. A lovely dancing girl, Slattery.
No! Oh! No! No!
Easy now. Come on. Yeah. Chum, come on, try this. It'll bring you around.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, eh? Oh, it's you. How dumb do you think I am, Slattery?
Hey, easy. No way. You got it wrong, chum. I didn't slip you that, Mickey. Come on, now. Lay back. You're going to be okay.
How long have I been out?
Oh, about an hour. Oh. You're in the storeroom behind the bar. Now, just take it slow, Mr. Marlowe.
How do you know my name?
Well, I checked your wallet when you folded, chum, and saw you with a big-shot private dick from Hollywood.
Yeah?
That gave you my vote.
Really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I heard all about you, Mr. Marlowe. The time you nailed that lousy Paul Miles who was hitting all the bars for some old-time protection. Yeah, but you should have said who you was.
Yeah.
Oh.
Hey, Slattery, got any idea who got to my drink?
No. It must have been the bird next to you, Ryan Water on the side.
Maybe. You know him? Here, come on, help me up.
Yeah, sure.
Oh.
Steady, easy now. There we are. No. Never seen him before. He shoved off when you went to see Louie.
What'd he look like, Slattery, think?
Oh, well, he smoked a cigar.
Yeah?
He had kind of a red face and was wearing a camel hair overcoat. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. He was nervous. He kept playing with a book of matches. He tore them out one at a time, and then he bent them up. See?
Bent them up, huh?
Yeah.
You don't know his name, where he hangs out?
No, zero, chum, except that Louie heard him ask someone about how to get to Palm Springs, but, Mr. Marlowe, I do know about Sammy Archer.
You do?
Yeah, I didn't want to talk up before Mr. Marlowe because I didn't know
Slattery,
you.
Slattery, where can I find Archer?
Well, you ain't putting him on the spot for someone, eh?
No, nothing like that. He called my office today, said he had some kind of a business deal with a guy he didn't trust. Wanted me to meet him here at the bar, get the details, and play bodyguard. Now, come on, tell me, Slattery, who is Archer? Where can I find him?
Hey, he's a second story man, Mr. Marlowe.
He's a... You mean that...
Yeah, he knocks off fancy places. Beverly Hills, most of the time. He's strictly a prowler.
Oh, fine.
Well, you could probably tag him over at 31 West Grand. He's got a basement apartment there. But, look, you ain't gonna be careless about the dope I gave out, are you, now?
Don't worry. I'm not gonna work for him, Slattery. I still handpick my clients.
Well, then, why are you going there?
For a lead, Slattery. A lead on a nervous guy in a camel hair coat. You see, I also handpick my enemies. One West Grand Avenue was a dirty stone tenement propped up by a dirty stone stoop. A cracked pavement led to the basement apartment, which showed a fuzzy slice of yellow light, where the door was cracked open inches. So when I knocked, I was ready for almost anything, just as long as it was on the seamy side. But I didn't expect it to come from overhead.
You're wasting your time, big boy. When Sammy leaves his door open, you shouldn't bother knocking.
You mean he's out?
No, I mean he's in. And he's got the blind staggers. I know. I heard him falling over the furniture. But go ahead. See for yourself. If you'll pardon appearances. The big slob.
The lady was right. A tinny radio led me to the basement room where I found the two scarred wicker chairs and the single end table on hand turned over. Drawers open and overflowing, pieces of discarded clothing everywhere. And in the middle of all that, sprawled along the edge of a threadbare couch that was weak in the springs, Sammy Archer. He was facing me, eyes closed, and wearing a faded blue bathrobe two sizes too big for him. And next to one hand that rested on the floor was an empty gin bottle sitting on a clipping, torn out of a fashion magazine. On one side, an ad for a Bendix automatic washer. On the other, a picture of a diamond tiara. A jeweled crown, which the caption said belonged to Mrs. Bessie Dunsmuir of Palm Springs, California's most celebrated hostess. Well, it was a good time to awaken mine host by shaking well. Hey, Sammy. Archer, come on, pull yourself together. I should have known better. You can't wake a dead man by shaking him. Especially when he's got a knife buried in the middle of his back. Phil Marlowe, Remini.
Oh, hiya, Phil.
Tribune got time for a few questions?
Oh, we're up to our ears with the Dunsmuir story. What do you got, Phil? Beauty, beast, or traffic accident?
Skinny guy with a golf ball complexion and the name Sammy Archer. Ever hear of him?
Sure, a two-time loser out of Joliet. Jewelry, team with a fence named Christy Roach.
Roach, huh? Say, tell me, Tony, what is he... Hey, wait a minute, Remini, what did you just say about Dunsmuir?
Huh? Oh, that. Didn't you catch PM sheets?
No.
Someone got away with a precious tiara last night. It was insured for $100,000.
They tag anyone for it?
Not yet, but they're working on it. Seems that a gardener left her Palm Springs lash up at the same time as a crown of diamonds.
Gardener, huh?
Yeah, was working under a phony name.
Well, this Christy Roach, what's he look like?
Oh, big red face, wears a cigar front and center.
Thanks, now I'm really getting someplace.
That means what, Phil?
2 feet from the corpse, Remini. There's a textbook on gardening.
Corpse? What corpse? Where are you, Marlowe?
31 West Grand Avenue, where somebody stabbed Sammy Archer to death. Now listen, Remini. If you sit on this a while, I think I may be able to wrap it all up for you after a quick trip to Palm Springs.
Why not use us and the law? What's your angle, Phil?
A very personal one, kid.
Like what?
Like a Mickey that shredded the lining of my stomach. I don't like that kind of treatment. It's bad for the ego. I'll call you later. Goodbye. The trip to Palm Springs was 2.5 hours of hard driving through sterile wasteland. And there was plenty of time for me to add what always came out to the same thing. Sammy Archer, posing as a gardener, swiped the Dunsmuir tiara to pedal through Christy Roach, whom he feared. But Roach had double-crossed him, in a permanent sort of way, taking care of me and then headed for Palm Springs. Yeah, but there I got stopped each time. Why Palm Springs? Unless, of course, Archer's apartment turned inside out meant that the tiara was still hidden someplace in the desert hamlet. Yeah, that really would make it a cinch to find.
Yes, sir?
I'd like to see Mrs. Bessie Dunsmuir, please. My name is Philip Marlowe.
Police or gentlemen of the press are no longer welcome. Good evening, sir.
Steady, Jeeves. I have information about the tiara. Now tell that to your mistress, or you'll only be able to look down that long nose through one eye.
This way, sir, if you please.
The interior of the Dunsmuir shanty was strictly colossal. From a foyer the size and shape of the Union Station to a plush, leather-lined den that was about as cozy as a parking lot. And Mrs. Bessie Dunsmuir herself fitted perfectly. Because as the renowned party giver glided into the room, I saw enough jewelry on her arms, ears, and neck to match Tiffany, carat for carat. She listened intently while I brought her up to date. After that, she ushered me into an uncomfortable chair, rang for long nose, and then asked a sensible question.
Mr. Marlowe, this Sammy Archer, what did he look like?
Well, he was thin, Mrs. Dunsmuir, and sandy hair. Does that fit your ex-gardener?
Precisely. Now perhaps we're actually going to make some progress. The police here haven't, and... come in, Martin. Oh, a liqueur, Mr. Marlowe?
Oh, no, thanks, no.
Thank you, Martin.
Mrs. Dunsmuir,
yes.
Did you ever notice a red-faced man who smoked cigars hanging around, talking to Archer, perhaps?
No, I never did. Did you, Martin?
No, madam, I don't believe I did. Mm. Excuse me, madam.
Sir. Good evening, Dunsmuir residence. Who's calling, please? One moment, sir. Mr. Endicott, madam.
Endicott? I don't seem to know any Endicott. Hello? I'm sorry, Mr. Endicott, but I don't seem to recollect... what? You... well... yes. Yes, of course. I'll see you tonight here. Goodbye.
What's wrong, Mrs. Dunsmuir?
Oh, just some more trouble over the estate. Ever since my husband passed on 3 years ago, we've had a mountain of trouble with his investments.
I see. Well, about the tiara, Mrs.
Mr. Marlowe, do what you can about locating it. You'll be rewarded handsomely by the insurance company if you're successful, I'm sure. They stand to lose $100,000.
Yeah, but now, can't you tell me anything about Archer?
I'm afraid not. I don't believe I ever said more than 2 words to him. Now, excuse me, Mr. Marlowe, and thank you for your interest. Martin,
madam,
please show the gentleman out.
Outside, I chalked the Dunsmuir interview off at face value. Proof positive that Sammy Archer and the sticky-fingered ex-gardener were one and the same. Then I headed for town on the first public phone, which was at a mobile gas station. There I swapped a $10 bill for a pocketful of quarters and started calling people back in L.A. who might know more about Christy Roach and the kind of connections he could have in Palm Springs. But after 4 near misses, I quit and stepped aside to let a big man with a beefy face that belonged on an English bulldog take his turn. However, he had other ideas, and he pointed them out bluntly with a shiny automatic.
I wonder if you could help me, Sonny. I'm looking for a diamond tiara.
You gotta be kidding. I wear a fedora besides...
Hold it right there. I have news for you, sonny. While you were gabbing into the tube there, the station attendant left, closed shop, went into the bar next door. Out of earshot.
So?
So we're alone. And that means I'm going to...
You very little...
Stay right there, Marlowe.
Well. Christy Roach. Red face, cigar and all. Glad to see you.
Shut up. Come on, we're getting out of here.
Without our buddy, then?
Don't worry about him, Marlowe. He'll keep that way. Maybe a lot longer than you will.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, every Wednesday night, CBS, the network of the stars, brings you Groucho Marx in his dizzy quiz, You Bet Your Life. Here to hear You Bet Your Life, starring Groucho Marx, this Wednesday night on most of these same CBS stations, as well as Dr. Christian and that bright new musical show, The ABCs of Music. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, the second act of Philip Marlowe, and tonight's story, The Uneasy Head.
From the way Christy Roach had brought his gun barrel down on the bulldog's scalp, I knew he meant it when he jammed the same gun into the small of my back and marched me to my car. He didn't relax until we were driving down a dark side street toward the center of town.
Well, kid, you jumped right out of the frying pan into the fire. You should have taken that first hint I tossed you.
The Mickey? Yeah, that was real cute. But it was too subtle, Christy. I didn't really peg you till I found Sammy Archer.
Oh? It's too bad about Sammy. That was more or less of a mistake.
Oh, sure. You only intended to carve your initials. The knife slipped.
No slips, kid. At the time, I thought Sammy had tried to pull a fast one on me, but I found out later he was just stupid. He had a great thing, and he was just too dumb to see it. As for you, turn east the first chance you get, and don't run any stop signs, you understand?
Where are we going?
Oh, no place in particular, just so it's nice and quiet. You know, you don't know when to quit, Marlowe, so now you're just one of the loose ends I've got to tuck in before I clean up my business here. Take it easy on the corners.
You told me to turn east the first chance I...
I also told you to mind your manners!
Busting my wrist isn't going to help my driving much.
It'll be worse the next time. I've got a lot of ground to cover yet tonight, and I want it smooth.
That's too bad. Because there's a bump coming up fast right now. We picked up a tail. Huh? Take a look.
Cops.
Yeah, cops. Call it, laughing boy. You're the skipper. Do we race them out of town, or do I pull over?
Pull over. I don't know what that beef is, but play it straight, kid, because if it comes to shooting, you'll be the first to drop.
Can't you read, buddy? You're on a one-way street.
You're telling me.
Yeah, only you're going the wrong way.
Yeah, I know. Well, you see, my friend...
I warned you.
What about him?
Well, he's in a hurry, officer. I was taking him as far as the corner there. He said it was okay to come this way. I didn't. I'm a stranger here.
Uh-huh. Also, you're a big boy now. You should make up your own mind.
You're so right.
Here, Mac, if you're in a hurry, you can go, but you better get out and walk.
Thank you.
Your friend here is going to be tied up for quite a spell. All right, let me see your license.
Maybe the limb of the law and I should have nailed him right then and there. But there were still too many loose ends, and I wanted Christy Roach to clear them up for me. So I watched him walk out of sight while I listened with half an ear to a lecture on blind drivers. Well, it was a small enough price to pay for the service rendered, so I thanked the officer for the ticket and then... headed back to the filling station in a bulldog with a headache who might be in a mood to talk. But when I got there, I found he hadn't waited around. After that, I checked the neighborhood and was 15 minutes getting to first base, which turned out to be the bar of a French restaurant across the street, run by one Monsieur Jean Corret, a high-octane number who apparently had overheard a phone call earlier.
I immediately notified the police. Nothing, they said. Believe me, my friends, the lowliest gendarme in Paris would have more sense. Throw away an important clue? Never. I tell you, our police...
Mr. Corret, can I see you a minute?
But of course, monsieur. What is it?
Well, it better be in private, huh? It's about the Dunsmuir case.
Ah, non, non. Step this way, monsieur.
All right.
You naturally are a detective.
Naturally, yeah. Now, look, I understand you overheard a phone call.
Oh, yes. About an hour ago, a suspicious man called the Dunsmuir place from here.
What did he look like?
I am desolated, monsieur. I do not know.
You said it was an important clue.
I assume it was important. In a case as big as this, anything may be important. The smallest...
You made your point. You made your point. Go ahead.
Bien. He made an appointment. I only overheard, monsieur. The telephone is back this way in the alcove out of sight.
Uh-huh.
Bien, I was passing by right here when I heard a man ask for the Dunsmuir residence. He talked to his party and made an appointment.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't hear where or when, so I went on about my business. But suddenly, a memory exploded like a bomb in my head. Bessie Dunsmuir, the owner of the stolen tiara. I rushed like this, monsieur, to the phone. Pardon, madame. But he was gone, monsieur. I called the police at once.
The rest I can fill in. Now tell me something else, Mr. Corey. Did you happen to notice a man with a cut on his head around here a while ago?
A cut?
Yeah.
Why, yes. One who looked as ugly as Satan himself. I saw such a one in the washroom. Ah, you mean he's a suspect?
Well, not exactly, no, but he's connected. Where can I find him?
Ah, you ask me, monsieur. He was sick. I tried to help him, but he refused and left.
You've no idea where he went?
No. But wherever it was, I'll wager he was too wobbly to get there, monsieur.
All right. In that case, I better make a quick call and
The telephone, certainly.
Yeah.
I know, Claire. Bessie Dunsmuir hasn't had a new husband for 2 whole years, my dear. I can't imagine how she keeps up that elaborate front of hers. Why, do you know
you.
That... what?
Madame, hang up the telephone at once. I insist. Vitement.
I beg your pardon.
In the name of the police, monsieur is a detective. I demand you clear the line.
I've paid my nickel and
Never mind. Skip it. But I would like to know about those bent matches on the floor.
Well, I don't know.
What do they mean, monsieur?
I better skip the call and get going fast. You've been a big help, Corey. Maybe I can get you the Croix de Guerre. Bent matches that littered the floor under the phone meant that the man who had made an appointment to meet with Bessie Dunsmuir had been the fence, Christy Roach. And to top it off, she'd lied about it. It didn't make any sense. But I added it to the rest of the question marks and made a beeline for Bessie's mansion. I parked a block away from the place, walked back, and let myself in through an iron gate at the side, and wound up in front of a car half hidden in a clump of hibiscus bushes. A man was leaning in the open door with a match in his hand, reading the registration on the steering post. It was the bulldog I'd seen first at the gas station. When he saw me, his hand dived under his jacket for a gun, but I was on him before he could get it out.
Oh, my head.
You're due for another dose of the same, Buster, unless I get some fast answers. The time for games is over, and even a private detective can run out of patience.
You're a Private Dick?
Yeah.
You, I don't get it. This car here belongs to the guy who helped you, fence, Christy Roach. And if he's inside, I got...
Roach didn't help me, and you've got to do nothing till I find out about you. Who are you?
Temple. Fred Temple. Amlin Insurance Company.
Oh, no.
We're covering the missing tiara. Only something's haywire.
An insurance investigator?
Yeah, yep. I'm not going to make it, fella. My head, it... You better get in there and stop...
When he passed out, he sagged against me like a sack of wet wash. I stretched him out on the grass and after one look knew there was nothing more I could do. I went over to the house and quietly tried locked doors all the way around until I came to an open one in the butler's quarters. A bed lamp was on, so I braced myself for another meeting with Martin. When he came to the door, he was in his nightshirt. As soon as enough of his chin was showing, I swung! It was a distinct pleasure. I stepped over him and went through his rooms and on up the long hall to the main part of the house. I finally located Bessie in the leather-lined den. She was alone, but judging from the rate she was burning up the jittery cigarette in her hand, she expected trouble at any moment.
Marlowe, how did you get in here? Why are you here?
Just checking up on a lie, Bessie.
Lie? I don't know what you're talking about.
A late day tonight. Incidentally, he's due any second now. His car is outside.
On my grounds?
Yeah. Surprised? What's so important about that? Now, look, you better tell me all about it, Bessie.
No,
Get out of here. Get out.
Later. Right now, this setup is so full of holes, even the truth is leaking out. First, Roach the fence, figuring Sammy Archer, the guy who swiped your tiara, was pulling a fast one. And he changed his mind and got a new angle. Second, you brushed me off because actually you're afraid of finding the tiara. And third, the insurance company that's covering your loss is suspicious. Yeah, it's screwy, but it can only add one way. Like the tiara that was stolen from here yesterday is worthless.
Are you insane? It was famous, fabulous, worth a king's ransom.
Yeah, the original, maybe. Not the cheap duplicate. I may be fuzzy on the details, but the big pitch is easy. You dismantled the original and sold it probably quite a while ago. But not before you made a duplicate to keep up appearances so gossips wouldn't know you were going broke. Also, you kept up the insurance on it for the same reason. And the duplicate was stolen. People knew you'd been robbed, so you were forced to claim the insurance. But you knew that if the fake was recovered legally, you'd be prosecuted by the insurance company and disgraced. Sure, Christy Roach knows that, too. He's coming here for blackmail, isn't he? Why else? Come on, Bessie, you might as well... You might as well...
Might as well what? What are you looking at?
A cigar butt there on the floor.
Oh.
It's burned a hole in your rug. What happened to make Roach drop a cigar, Bessie? Where is he?
I don't know what you're...
Stay away from that desk! I mean it, Bessie. Next time it's for keeps. Now stay back. Where is he?
In the closet there. I didn't know what else to do. You are right about the blackmail, about everything. I had to kill him. He'd have wrecked my life.
Yeah. Just your way of life. That was top-heavy anyway.
I guess so. But I thought I had to have it that way. Well, at least I'll give them all a big laugh on the way out. Bessie Dunsmuir's a great entertainer.
Bessie Dunsmuir, the world's greatest hostess, invited the police and reporters out herself. The fake tiara was found in the back of Roach's car, and she wore it cocked over one eye for the benefit of the press, the photographers, and her friends. By the time that party was over, it was almost dawn. Bessie was right. The papers came out and the giggles began. But Fred Temple drinking coffee under a head full of bandages didn't see much to laugh at.
It's pathetic. Something awful sad there someplace, Marlowe.
I agreed. Uneasy lies the head that wears a crown. Even a phony one.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Norman McDonnell and are written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Philip Marlowe will be heard Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Be sure and be with us again next week on Wednesday evening when Philip Marlowe says...
This time there was an...
Thanks for joining us for the Adventures of Philip Marlowe. We always appreciate reviews, and we appreciate Spotify comments. Thanks for joining us here at 1001 Radio Crime Solvers. This is your host, John Hagedorn, and we'll be back soon.